In the name of one God, creator, redeemer, and sustainer of our lives. Amen. This Sunday is often known as Good Shepherd Sunday because the lectionary often chooses like the 23rd Psalm and a gospel text that talks about Jesus being the Good Shepherd. And it's this metaphor we've used for the love of God, of this the Good Shepherd means, meaning like, I mean, often, you know, shepherds are tend their sheep and they take care of their sheep, but there's this profound love that's used in the biblical metaphor of the shepherd for the sheep, right? Which is this unlikely pairing, or why should a shepherd care so much for the sheep? And we're used to it, and we've become kind of inured to it. But it feels appropriate that we should actually on this day and this week use it to talk about Jean Vanier. Jean Vanier is one of the living saints. CBC had him as one of the top 20 Canadians ever. He was a spiritual giant, actually, who died this week, and it feels appropriate that we should remember him. He, in the early 60s, you know, he was born from, I think his father was the governor general in Quebec. He was born to a family of power and privilege and wealth. He became a professor of theology at a Catholic university, and then, you know, he became aware of the pain and suffering of developmentally disabled adults. And at that point, they were just institutionalized. It was a different world. There was a real sense of there's something deficient, there's something wrong, there's something other about these people. And we're not like them. And so we need to house them and put them away. And they were put away in inhumane conditions. And so Jean Vanier, you know, entered in to that relationship. And so I'm going to show a couple of videos in honor of Jean Vanier and talk about my own personal experience. So this first video kind of lays the foundation of it. It's from 1965. It's a CBC interview. Some of you were alive then to be able to watch it, I can tell. You may find some of the language in it jarring because it represents that othering language that people used to talk about. Right, so it's gonna. Some of it may be a little jarring, and it's a testimony to Jean Vanier's life that we don't talk that way anymore. So, but it's interesting. If it works out, we'll see if it works out. I'm never sure about that.
Born this year will be afflicted with some degree of mental retardation. Many of them won't lead a normal childhood. Some will never really grow up. Most of them are capable of living almost like you and I, but in Canada, they won't get the chance.
You all know who these boys are. In Ontario alone, there are nearly 5,000 youngsters vegetating in four institutions, in isolation, neglect, out of the way. Our attitude towards the mentally handicapped has improved, but the system for their care and training is far behind other countries. In Holland, for example, Mongoloids work at assembling transistor radios. These boys will be lucky if they see the outside world. There's one other thing they never seem to get at the institution: love. One man who is trying to help is the son of our Governor General. Dr. Jean Vanier has chosen to live in poverty near Paris, France, with mentally deficient adults. He calls the settlement L'Arche, the Ark. Bill McNeil talks to him.
Dr. Vanier, this is an extremely interesting experiment. What you are doing basically is creating family units for the mentally retarded people.
Yes, that's right. You see, in France and in Canada, and pretty well in all the European countries, a great deal has been done for the, maybe not enough, but anyway, things are being done for the mentally deficient children, up to the age of 20. There have been schools have been started, training centers have been started, professional training centers. But for a lot of these children, when they get to the age of 20, when they become adults, what is left for them. If they haven't families, and if they can't remain in particular family surroundings, their own family surroundings, what is happening is that they're sent into large institutions, mentally deficient, large homes, psychiatric hospitals, asylums. And I can tell you it's a really very sad thing to visit some of these large institutions where you find 1,000, 1,500, sometimes 2,000 mentally deficient together. There you find that they're living dead.
Yes.
And, well, what we wanted to do was to create small family homes for these men, who are wonderful people. And we're having these houses in the village. We have already one house, and we have four mentally retarded men, 20, 23, 20, and 35. And then we'd like to have a number of these houses. There's another house being lent to us. And I think eventually what we want is to create a whole village, say 5, 6, 7, 8 of these houses with between 5 and 8 mentally deficient per house, workshops where they can create. They're extraordinarily good workers.
So they can,
oh, it's extraordinary. They're wicker baskets. I've seen villages in England where they make wicker baskets, dolls, all various activities and so on.
When you bring them into this home, you want them to live in a family atmosphere, something that they're missing.
Yes, I think this precisely, so where they can feel that they are loved, where we live all together, where there's not this sort of distinction between the director and those that are directed, where they all feel that we're, well, a family together, brothers and sisters, if you like, all father, and in a very, very happy family atmosphere where we eat together, where we live together, where we work together, in this, as I say, this family atmosphere.
Dr. Vanier, your own attitude towards the mentally deficient is, to say the least, somewhat different. You feel that they have a great deal to give to this world, and that great deal is in love.
Well, I feel this very profoundly. The few months that I have been working with them, or the months that I've been working with them, I must say they've taught me a great deal. You see, if we're really honest with ourselves in our world, we're becoming hard. We're becoming indifferent through ambition, through many other reasons. Our civilization is a hard civilization. We have to fight in our civilization. What you discover with these mentally deficient is, though they're deficient mentally, they're not at all deficient cordially of their hearts, and they're not deficient spiritually either, I would say. I find that they have a deep affectivity, a deep affection. They're extremely loyal, extremely good, extremely kind. They love animals. They love nature. And they can teach us that the primacy of love. I think this is to tell you a story of Michelle, for instance, a girl, 13, blind, deaf, dumb, completely prostrate, will never be able to walk, incontinent. I spent maybe half an hour with Michelle one day, and I must say she taught me a great deal. I held hands with Michelle. She is the only means of communication between Michelle and myself. And what Michelle taught me was that in order to communicate with these mentally deficient, we have to become really loyal and true and pour ourselves. Most of the time when we're in front of people, we're playing a game. We're playing a game with ourselves, we're playing a game with them. We're pretending we're somebody else than we really are. And I found that with Michelle, well, you break down all the barriers of ambition, and you just have to become your real self.
You know you don't have to be phony in the slightest aspect.
Precisely. They make you realize that reality is something. They make you discover what really love and tenderness and mercy and purity really are. And I think this is what they've taught me.
In other words, as you say, they can teach us a lot.
I must say, our boys, for instance, who arrived without anything, nothing at all, just a small little suitcase. They've got nothing above their heads. They've got a lot in their hearts. But in their poverty, they can teach us to live in a very unified way. They, for instance, our boys, extremely joyful. Everything, just the smallest things of life bring joy to them. We laugh. I don't say we laugh all day, but it is. There's this atmosphere of happiness because, in a way, they are poor. And poverty, I frequently find, when it's brought up in this sort of simplicity of life, can bring happiness when you're not all fighting for money.
Dr. Vanier, I think it'd be a marvelous idea if we could send some people over from Canada to work with you.
Oh, this would be wonderful, I must say.
Have you come back here?
Well, I think this would be the sort of nice thing, if this could happen, that sometimes they could come and then come back to Canada. You see, I feel very much that the mentally deficient are the people who have no voice in our land. And I think that there have to be people who can speak for them.
I think it's a marvelous project. I hope it spreads around the world. Thank you very much, Dr. Vanier.
Dr. Vanier and Bill McNeil seem to be talking about the essence of the pure human relationship, the communication of real feeling between two people without pseudo-sophistication. Apparently, we do have something to learn from these people.
So, growing up, for myself, I had always felt profoundly uncomfortable working with, I mean, whenever I encountered somebody who had a developmental disability. You know, at that point in my life, in my early 20s, I was very much in my head and hadn't yet really begun to learn how to live in my heart as well. And folks with developmental disabilities don't necessarily live in their heads. They live in their hearts very strongly. And so I didn't know how to kind of make that encounter. But I had a good, one of my best friends in college, his dad worked, was a chaplain with developmentally disabled adults. And he talked about his experiences with that. And another friend, she had done some work with developmentally disabled adults. And I heard them talking about it. And I heard the sense of transformation that they felt. So I read a book by Jean Vanier called Community and Growth. And it rocked my world. I mean, there's something about it that called a kind of, and it was him talking mostly about how when he went into this, he felt like he was the one who was going to help these people. He was the one who was normal and healthy, and he was going to help these people who were somehow deficient. And he realized, you know, as he encountered their need and as he encountered their just raw emotional authenticity, that they had a lot to teach him. And he began to understand his own need, right, and his own human. They taught him a lot about being human and a lot about that need, about his own need for love and to be loved and what it means to live in love. So that book inspired me to work with developmentally disabled adults for a season in a group home in Denver, and they were profoundly disabled. These were folks who couldn't necessarily wash themselves or eat by themselves, some of them. They had to be institutionalized. There was no way that they could live by themselves, but it was, you know, they were trying to do it humanely there. And, you know, honestly, my initial reaction was one of revulsion. I mean, there was something within me that there was a misshapen. There were several of these folks were physically deformed, you know, in what I felt was grotesque ways. Honestly, at the time, that's what it was, that I encountered something that felt very grotesque and I didn't know how to deal with it. So I stepped into it. I mean, because I read Jean Vanier's book. And in that process, you know, learned to care, learned to experience care, discovered their humanity in the midst of it. And in the process, learned, you know, developed some of my own humanity in the process. And I'm very grateful for that. Jean Vanier talks a little bit about his experience with that, too.
Woman with a severe mental handicap, the incredible cry that is coming from them, what I would call the primal cry, which is, do you love me? It's a very deep cry. And you find with people with mental handicaps, this is their, do you love me? Why have I been abandoned, or has my life any value? Somewhere this cry of, do you want to be my friend, touched me. I began visiting asylums, hospitals, different institutions, families, and I discovered an immense world of pain which I had never, never could have imagined. So I discovered all this world which I hadn't even imagined existed. And it seemed very clear to me that Jesus was asking me just to take one or two men and to start living together. So I was able to buy a small, broken-down house, and I welcomed two men, Raphael and Philippe, from an institution. Raphael had a meningitis. He couldn't walk very well. He couldn't speak very well. Philippe had an encephalitis, one arm paralyzed, one leg paralyzed, living in a world of dream, but also with quite a severe mental handicap. We began to to live together, and I did the cooking, so we didn't eat very well. We did everything together. We cooked, we worked in the garden together. We fought together. We prayed together. We forgave each other. And so a whole sort of journey began. Little by little, I began, you see, I began by thinking that I could do good for them. But then as the days and then the months moved on, I began to discover what they were doing for me, transforming me, changing me. I thought I was going to teach them something, and suddenly I was discovering that they were teaching me quite a bit. When Jesus says, "Whoever welcomes one of these little ones in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the Father, or the one who sent me." And when Jesus says that I was in prison and you visited me, I was sick and you visited me, I was naked and you clothed me, I was hungry and you gave me food, I was thirsty and you gave me to drink, I was a stranger, I was strange, I was different, and you welcomed me. Well, it's really true. And I never knew this. I mean, I'd read it in the Gospels, but I didn't know what it meant. And I must say that there is what I've learned from people like Eric, that what is important in human relationships is discover that God has led us together. I feel that very clearly for myself, that it was Jesus who brought me to handicapped people. And I know the day that I welcomed Raphael and Philippe, I knew, and I know today, that it was an irreversible act, that in welcoming Raphael and Philippe, it was a covenant that I was entering into.
Towards the end of his life in the 90s, he wrote a book called Becoming Human. And I think in the process of you know, working with these folks, what he discovered, this isn't just about developmentally handicapped folks or developmentally delayed folks. This is all of us. This is all of us and all of our need for love and all of the ache in our heart and how do we step in to being human. So the last clip here is just him talking a little bit about that.
To be fully human is really to discover who I am. And who am I? I'm a part of a member of the huge human family, where we're all brothers and sisters, wherever we come from, whatever our culture, whatever our religion. We were born in weakness, we will grow, and we will die. So the story of each one of us is a story of accepting that we are fragile. To discover who I am is to discover also a unity between my head and my heart. The head, we are called to grow, to understand, and to work through things. But the heart is something else. It's about concerned by others. We were born into a relationship, and that relationship which we all lived is a relationship with our mom. Well, we were so small, so weak, so fragile, and we heard the words which are the most important and maybe the words we need to hear all our life. I love you as you are. You are my beloved son or my beloved daughter. And this is what gives consistency to people. They know they are loved, and that's what they're seeking for maybe the rest of their lives. So there's the head where we are called to understand, to deepen the laws of the world, of nature, and so on. But there's also the heart. The heart is a very fragile part of us, and terribly fragile in the little child. If the little child is not loved at the moment of his birth and the few months after, there's a deep, deep inner wound. And from that wound comes up anguish, and from anguish comes fighting and wanting to win and to prove that I am someone. Fundamentally, to develop the heart is to see that in each person you are beautiful. You see, the whole thing with human beings is to learn to love. And to love is not to do things for people. It's not to tell people what to do. It's to reveal. What do we reveal? You're important. You might be important in the things you do, but there's something even more important than what you do. It's who you are. And who you are is something about your heart, by being open to others. A heart that is not filled with fear. The problem today is that many people are filled with fear. They are frightened of people, frightened of losing. And because people are filled with fear, they can no longer be open to others. They're protecting themselves, protecting their class, protecting their group, protecting their religion. We're all in a state of protection. To become fully human is to let down the barriers, to open up and to discover that every person is beautiful. Under all their jobs they're doing, responsibilities, there is you. And you, at the heart of who you are, you're somebody also crying out, does somebody love me? Not just for what I can do, but for who I am. So to be fully human is the development of the heart and the head, and then we can become one inside of us. Becoming one inside of us, we can little by little let down the ego, the need to prove that I am better than you. And then I can begin to see in other people, other groups, other religions, other cultures, that people are wonderful. And then we can come and we can work for peace together.
One of the challenges of the Christian tradition is that the heart of our tradition is love, right? We talk about God being loved. Jesus said the fulfillment of the law, or the summation of the law, is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, to love your neighbor as you love yourself, right? Which includes then being able to love yourself. And we say that so easily, and it's so trite in some sense that we become inoculated in some sense to it. And I'm struck by his life. His life is, he spent his life learning how to do that and learning about that. And I don't know if he would say that he even got there, right? If he even completed and fully understood it. I know my own journey that it has been this kind of ongoing process of learning to love. Learning to love myself, learning to love others, learning to love God. But it's also then about learning to receive love. I mean, even more fundamentally, to know myself as being loved. Loved by God, first and foremost, right? And I think that invitation, you know, he would say that Jesus invited him to live with people who had developmentally disabilities so that he could learn how important it was to understand your own need for love. That's the journey, in my sense, of what we're on. Today, I am grateful for Jean Vanier and the model and witness that he was in leading us in that path. Amen.